Our scripture reading for this morning comes from the second chapter of the book of 2 Kings. And I don't know, is this a coincidence that we had Swing Low Sweet Chariot today, or was that planned? It was planned, so you knew what the text was. Okay, because that spiritual is based on this text. So I didn't know if that was just going to be divine inspiration or you actually knew about it. But that's great. It was wonderful to have it. So this is the account of Elijah going up into heaven in a chariot and Elisha, his protege, inheriting his mantle. Now when the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me as far as Bethel." But Elisha said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of prophets who were in Bethel came out to Elisha and said to him, "Did you know that today the Lord will take your master away from you?" And he said, "Yes, I know. Keep silent." Elijah said to him, "Elisha, stay here, for the Lord has sent me to Jericho." But he said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they came to Jericho. The company of prophets who were at Jericho drew near to Elisha and said to him, "Do you know that today the Lord will take your master away from you?" And he answered, "Yes, I know. Be silent." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." But he said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So the two of them went on. 50 men of the company of prophets also went and stood at some distance from them, as they were both standing by the Jordan. Then Elijah took his mantle and rolled it up and struck the water. The water was parted on the one side to the other until the two of them crossed on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I may do for you before I am taken from you." Elisha said, "Please let me inherit a double portion of your spirit." He responded, "If you have asked a hard thing. Yet if you see me as I am being taken from you, it will be granted to you. If not, it will not." As they continued walking and talking, a chariot of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah ascended in a whirlwind into heaven. Elisha kept watching and cried out, "Father, Father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen." But when he could no longer see him, he grasped his own clothes and tore them in two pieces. He picked up the mantle of Elijah that had fallen from him and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. He took the mantle of Elijah and struck the water, saying, "Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" When he had struck the water was parted on the one side to the other, and Elisha went over. Let me tell you a story about Maine. In the town where I lived for a number of years, Monmouth, Maine, there was a lake, Lake Cocknawagon. If you can say that three times backwards, you're doing well. And there were even stranger names for some of the other lakes, all Native American names. And there was a tradition that had started quite a long time ago on Lake Cocknawagon in Monmouth. And that was to celebrate the day of ice out. Do any of you know what ice out is? You have an idea? I know Anita would know because she's heard me tell the story. Ice out is the day that all the ice has finally disappeared from the lake. Now that's a part of the country where, at least as I understand, things actually do freeze over in the winter. And it went back to the 1880s. There was a small stencil shop, just a small building. And the man who had owned the stencil shop had it on his property. And his son took over the tradition of recording facts about the weather taking a temperature several times a day, the wind direction, whether it was cloudy, rainy, snowing, or whatever. And beginning in 1881, he started recording the ice out date. Again, that was the date when all the ice was gone from the lake. And what he did was he recorded it on the bare plaster wall of the stencil shop. So in 1881, he wrote whatever the date was. And the next year, wrote the year, wrote the date, and so forth. And he continued doing this into the 1940s. He lived to be a ripe old age. And near the end of his life, he turned over the tradition of recording the ice out date to one of his neighbors, who did it for a number of years. And then as he got toward the end of his life, he passed that tradition on of recording the dates, no longer in the stencil shop, but just keeping a record of the dates. And so this was passed down from person to person. So when I lived there, the guy that was doing it was probably, I think, the fifth or sixth person that had been recording the ice out dates. Now, somebody who was on the board of the local museum, which by now owned the stencil shop, decided that they wanted to have a great fundraiser. And this is something you'll actually see a lot in northern New England, where you'll have some kind of a raffle or a lottery as to when the ice out date is going to be, like bingo. So you would pick your date, put your $20 or whatever on that particular date, and if you won it, then you would win the pot. So they would do like a 20-20 kind of a thing, or 50-50. And it became quite a popular thing in town. I don't know if they still do it. I'm sure they must, because this has been going on for a long time. So the tradition came and went, and as far as I know, still continues of celebrating the ice out date, which is really, in a way, kind of like celebrating the absolute end of winter, the last vestige of winter. And in that part of the country, ice out dates can be in early May, believe it or not. You can still see pieces of ice floating. So there was a cherished tradition that had been passed down. And until somebody actually came up with the idea of doing the raffle, there doesn't appear to have been a reason why you would record the ice out dates. I mean, why would you do it? You did it because it was done because it was a tradition. And that was the reason to do it. So we all know what it is to receive and to pass on traditions and to be the next generation to do whatever the tradition may be. And we all know what it's like to come up against challenges, whatever that challenge might be, and to think, well, what would this person have done? What would my father or mother or my grandparents, what would they have done in a particular situation? Even more challenging, what might they have done with a situation that wouldn't have happened in their own time? So we find in this story the passing on of a prophetic tradition from Elijah to Elisha. We've heard about Elijah a couple of times now in the last few weeks. He is second only to Moses in the prophetic tradition in the Jewish faith. Places where Elijah pops up in the Jewish tradition, for one, at Passover. If you've ever been to a Seder meal, you'll know that a place is set for the prophet Elijah in case he should come back, including a cup of wine. The connection with our own tradition is that many scholars believe that the Last Supper, the night before Jesus' crucifixion, was a Passover meal. And that the cup that he used was the cup of Elijah. That symbolism of coming back. It's passages like this that remind us that the world wasn't created the day before we were born, even though it is awfully tempting to think that the way that we do stuff is the way that it absolutely should be. And why? Because it's the way we do it. How's that for a rationale? Now, I've never heard that logic anywhere else. But it does pop up maybe once in a while. So in the story, we find Elijah and Elisha moving off, and they know that it is toward the end of Elijah's time. And as we think about the details of the story, don't get hung up on whether a chariot actually came down and swooped down and picked up Elijah. That doesn't really matter. I've often wondered if this is just a poetic way of describing Elijah's death. But we have the story to deal with, and so here it is. As they go to one town, and Elijah says, "This is as far as you need to go." But Elisha says, "No, I'm going to continue with you." And there seems at every stop to be a group of guys who are taunting Elisha because it is Elijah's time to go, and he just tells them to be quiet. They get to the place crossing over the Jordan. "Where have you heard a story about the Jordan River or about a body of water being parted?" The Exodus. Right. Remember last week, Elijah is on Mount Horeb where Moses received the Ten Commandments, and he sees the wind, the fire, and the earthquake, the signs that things that happened during the Exodus. So here we have a connection again with Moses and the Exodus. And so as they cross the river, and crossing the Jordan happens in Joshua. In Christian symbolism, crossing the River Jordan has become a metaphor for death, for passing or crossing into heaven. And so Elijah asks Elisha, once they have crossed over, "So what do you want before I leave?" And Elisha asks for one thing, but he ends up getting two. "I want a double portion of your spirit." Now it's clear that the relationship between Elijah and Elisha is almost like a father and son relationship. And it was a tradition at that time in many cultures in the ancient world that the oldest son would receive a double share of the inheritance. So not just one, but two. So Elisha seeing himself perhaps as Elisha seeing himself as Elijah's protege or son, well, he should get two. So he gets that. And then there's that word spirit again. The word that can also mean wind or breath. It is what animates us. How many times have you looked at a small kid running around and thought, "I wish I could just have half of that kid's energy now," right? So this is what Elisha is really asking for. "I want twice of what motivates you." So he gets it. But then he gets something else. After the chariot has come by and swooped up and picked up Elijah, he looks down at the ground and notices his mantle. Now, he didn't ask for the mantle. But obviously Elijah wasn't going to need it anymore. So he took it. This mantle that Elijah used almost as in the way that Moses used his staff. Again, thinking back about the Exodus. Touching the water to part it. Doing several other miracles. So here's that mantle. Funny thing is that it's not mentioned in any of the stories about Elisha. We assume he would have kept it. So what does the mantle represent? The mantle represents who Elijah was, his power, his ability. In practical purposes, it was an outer garment. It was like an overcoat. Elijah spent a great deal of time in the wilderness, and that mantle would have been a very practical thing. It would have been, perhaps could have functioned as a tent, perhaps a blanket. And in the days when people did not have extensive wardrobes, that mantle would have been an all-purpose thing. And it was how Elijah was known. That mantle, whatever color it was, and it may have been a bright color, we don't know. That mantle symbolized Elijah's role. And this is where we get the expression about taking up the mantle or inheriting somebody's mantle. This is where it comes from this story. About taking on the role that somebody else has played. So what might be the mantle for us? What might be a mantle for us? You would know better than I would at this point that there are probably traditions about who did what in the past in the church. Can you think of something that there was one person, perhaps in the past, a person who's now gone, that they did a particular job, and they did it every single Sunday? Who might that be? So we understand what it is to have traditions that are carried on from one person to the next. In the larger sense, though, we certainly do have things that we're charged with. If we want to understand what our mantle is, we can think about what it is that Jesus charges us with. Such as the very end of the Gospel of Matthew, what's often called the Great Commission. Go therefore, teaching, baptizing, making disciples in my name, and understand that I'm with you till the end of the age. Modeling Jesus' ministry and his approach to all people. Modeling God's love in difficult situations. Perhaps hearing the words, go and do likewise. For some, the mantle may be sell everything that you have and give the money to the poor. Go and tell others what God has done for us. Perhaps counteract hatred, greed, self-centeredness that we find in the world. To help bring people into healthy, positive relationships with God and with each other. And to be ambassadors of reconciliation. Ambassadors of reconciliation, which the world so sorely needs. That might be the mantle. It's not always clearly defined. But what Jesus calls us to do is to take on the mantle, perhaps of love, and let that be our guiding principle. Amen.